From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Author Judy Blume has been speaking for adolescents across America for more than 45 years. She's given voice to their secret fears about puberty and parents, religion and sexuality through Margaret, Davy, Catherine, Fudge, and more. Now she's out with a new book for adults, In the Unlikely Event, based on her real history in her hometown of Elizabeth, New Jersey, and one winter, 1951-52, when three passenger planes fell from the sky in 58 days. It goes deep into a community shaken by disaster, crashes so grim that it seemed that life would never be the same. This hour On Point, the new adult book from beloved author Judy Blume. You can join us on air or online. Which Judy Blume book did you read under your covers? Did she change your childhood, your teenage years? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City is Judy Blume, best-selling author of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Forever, Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, Summer Sisters, and so many more. Her new novel is In the Unlikely Event. Judy Blume, welcome to On Point. So nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Well, your novels for children and young adults have sold more than 85 million copies, translated into 32 languages. You've won countless literary awards. I'm curious with this new book, how your writing is different when you're writing for adults.
I'm not sure that it is different. I don't think it's different. The only thing that's different about this book is the way it came to me. And it came to me all at once, something that's never happened and will never happen again, with characters and families and how they're intertwined. And it came because, you know, I was there in 1951, 1952, although I am not any of these characters, and this is not about my life or what happened to me, but I was an observer, certainly, and I was there, so I remembered, but I did 5 months of research to make sure.
Right. So you were a teenager in Elizabeth, New Jersey, when these three planes crashed over a period of about 2 months. Take us into the heart of this book. What happened?
I start with a reunion 35 years later, because I read in the paper that there wasn't this kind of major reunion, but there was something where, you know, people were interviewed and they remembered. And so Mary, who is, I guess, the protagonist, although there are many characters in this book, Mary is now 50 years old, and she's coming back to a reunion of what was the worst year of her life. And then we go back in time to 1951, 1952, and the events of that year. And it's really the story of the families and the friendships and the falling in and out of love, the real life that keeps going on, because life goes on even against a background of these bizarre tragedies. Mm.
So read a bit from The Unlikely Event, your new novel. This is Mary's mother, Rusty. It's her birthday, right? And she and Mary are returning home from the movies, and then this horrible event happens before her eyes.
Yeah, it's a bitterly cold Sunday afternoon, and they're going home for Rusty's birthday dinner, which Irene, Rusty's mother, is cooking. At the corner of Westfield Avenue and Loudoun Street, a small child, one of the Bell kids probably, was sledding in front of her house. There was a bell in every grade. Mary knew at least four of them. Suddenly, the child screamed and pointed to the sky. Mary and Rusty looked up to see a ball of fire rushing toward them. Mary could feel the heat from above as Rusty grabbed her, pulling her across the street. They ran as fast as they could, but the fireball kept coming. They heard a deafening roar, then a splintering crash, followed by two explosions only a second apart. They were knocked down by the force, Rusty covering Mary's body with her own, trying to protect her. When Mary opened her eyes, she saw feet, dozens of feet, and at first she was so disoriented she didn't know where she was. She couldn't hear anything. There was a ringing in her ears. From every direction, people were running toward the flames that were shooting up toward the thing that had crashed and was burning in the frozen bed of the Elizabeth River.
Here is the real archival footage from the first of those crashes from December 1951, Universal International Newsreel, voiced by Ed Herlihy.
Here is the stark reality of the second worst air crash in America's commercial aviation history. A scant 7 minutes after taking off from Newark Airport, a twin-engine C-46 Army surplus plane bound for Miami plummets into the Elizabeth River in the center of Elizabeth, New Jersey, snuffing out all 56 lives aboard.
I'm curious, how did that impact you as a teenager to witness that and experience that?
It sounds, you know, and it is. I mean, it was a very long time ago, and I try to tell people, especially young people, that commercial airline flying was new then, and this particular plane, you know, it was what we called a non-sked. It was a non-scheduled airline, and that, I guess, today you would say it was the cheapest flight around. And flying was such an exciting idea. I hadn't flown yet. I didn't fly till I was 17. But people wanted to go. And these non-scheduled cheap flights to Miami were running probably more often than they were supposed to be running. And this was one of them. Mm. It was, you know, it was a tragedy. It was a disaster. But the book, I want to make that clear, the book is not a disaster. The book is about learning to deal with whatever life throws you and moving on and understanding that terrible things can happen and yet there's life to be lived.
Did they ever find out, you know, there were a lot of conspiracy theories, a lot of rumors. None of it turned out to be true. I guess they were just horrifying coincidences.
Well, they were. I mean, they were, and it involved Newark Airport. And yes, I have all the reports from the Civil Aeronautics Board. But the thing is that I was in junior high, and the boys in junior high, you know, we all needed some kind of explanation for this. And so the boys, being boys, were very into outer space, and that it was surely caused by flying saucers and zombies. And the girls, that is the smart girls, and I wanted to be one of them, said, it's got to be sabotage. And that sent most of us, including me, to the dictionary to look up the word. But, you know, the thing was like, well, but why are they coming to Elizabeth, New Jersey, when New York City is right across the river? And surely it's a mistake. They must want to get to New York, not Elizabeth, because, you know, what was Elizabeth after all?
Ominous thinking after, of course, what happened in 9/11.
Yeah, well, we didn't know what was going to happen then.
So this book came to you all at once, Judy Blume. What's your regular writing routine all these years? How is this different?
It's different because it's usually a character who comes to me, and that character lives inside my head for a long time. The character usually comes with a basic situation, maybe a family situation, maybe a personal situation. And I don't have a notebook full of incredible news stories to help me write the book. This book, you know, I have the news stories in a huge purple three-ring binder. So I was never alone. I always knew what was going to happen. And even though there were surprises along the way, because the only fun of writing, for me anyway, is the surprise. You never know from day to day what's going to happen. And I had that with the characters in this book. But I also knew so much more. I knew how these characters were all going to come together. I knew how it was going to end.
You've written so many beloved books for young readers. Why did you start writing for adults?
Well, I guess the first adult book was Wifey, and that was in 1978. And it was because I was also, a woman, although I identified totally with kids, and I still do. There were things that I wanted to write about other than being a kid.
Do you think readers will fall in love with Miri like they did with Dini and Blubber and all of those fantastic old characters?
I can only hope that they do.
Tell us about
her. There's Miri and there's Natalie and there's Christina. There are three young women in this book, and they come from very different families. Natalie's father is a dentist, and my father, my beloved father, was a dentist. And he is the only, Dr. O, Natalie's father, is the only fictional character in this book who is inspired by a real person, my father, who was called in as a dentist to identify the victims in all three crashes. Now, I knew that. I knew that he was doing that. But no adult at home or in school ever talked to any of us about what was going on. Miri, at least, has her wonderful Uncle Henry Ammerman, who is a hero in this book. He's a journalist, and he makes his name by covering these crashes. He never expected this to happen, but it happened, and he was there. And he wants to tell Miri the truth. He wants Miri to understand the truth.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about sudden events that impact our lives and how they play out in Judy Blume's latest novel, In the Unlikely Event. You can join the conversation. Have you witnessed your own unlikely event? How did it change your own life? Does it still work its way into your life today? Beloved author Judy Blume is with us. Her latest novel, of course, In the Unlikely Event. Deborah is on the line from New Orleans. From Orleans, Massachusetts. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Hi, good.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
So I was born and grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey. I was born actually a few years after the plane crashes, but when I was in high school, I went to Benedictine Academy. We were part of a disaster preparation. And we would be brought out to vacant land and given injuries. There were also cars and trucks that were towed out there. And this was a cooperative venture with all three hospitals and emergency personnel. And the disaster scenario was a plane crash. One year, I remember I had a punctured lung and a broken arm. And another year, I was DOA, and they told us how to act, and we were to be very serious about this, and the emergency personnel would come and pick us up and actually bring us to hospital.
Gosh, Deborah, thank you. The imagery there, Judy Blume, I mean, this event 60 years ago now had a tremendous influence on this community.
I know, but I also just want to get in there that unlikely events can be good, too. There's not just bad unlikely events in our lives. We all have unlikely events because we do never know what's going to happen next. And some of them are good.
So tell us about how these different characters in the book respond to tragedy.
Well, there's a young man named Mason McKittrick, and I don't want to give a lot away here, but Mason McKittrick lives in the only orphanage in town, Janet Memorial Home. And each of these planes fell very close to a school. The first one was two blocks from my junior high, but it was a Sunday. The second one just missed St. Mary's High School and across the street, Batten High School, which was the only public high school for girls. It's a school that I later went to. Almost came through the window and then crashed into a residential area across the street from the schools. And the third one, on a moonlit night, fell crashed into the grounds of this only orphanage in town. And the boys, and I knew this, I knew that this was the truth when I was a teenager, the boys ran out of the orphanage into the freezing cold night, and they went into the burning plane and exploding plane, and they rescued many people. There were many people who survived that crash. I don't know how that was possible. It was described in the newspaper, and I use this in the book because I use real news reports, that it came to broke apart like a swollen cream puff, an odd way to describe a plane. And the boys and Mason, my fictional character, is one of them. Mason actually rescues what we then called the stewardess. She would now be the flight attendant. And the stewardess was truly rescued by one of these boys who came running out. So, I mean, there were a lot of heroes. I think they just didn't stop to think. I've recently met one of the now men who was a boy then who ran into that plane. They just did it. You know, it happened, and they just, the adrenaline got going, and they just ran into the plane and rescued many people.
Here's Kat in Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, Kat. Welcome to On Point with Judy Blume.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I'm in the middle of reading the book, so thanks for not giving me any sneak preview of what's to come, but I'm very much enjoying the interconnectedness of the characters and the way the characters are drawn out, and also in terms of the architecture of how I'm reading those and meeting these people. It's that makes it very interesting to see the connections between the characters.
Kat, thank you. No spoilers here. We promise.
No
today.
Spoilers, I promise. And Kat, thank you so much for that, because I understand that in the beginning there are a lot of characters. And I'm just telling my readers, you know what? Don't go back and look up to see who's, you know, who is who. Just have faith. I have to have faith in my readers that just keep going on and you will find out how they are all connected. Ultimately.
Read a little bit more, Judy Blume.
Okay, this is a night after the first crash. You know, the first crash, I mean, nobody had a clue that it could ever happen again or yet again. So now it's holiday time. It's just a little bit after the crash. Was it wrong to go to a holiday dance just a week after something horrible had happened in their town? None of her friends thought so. This is Mary's voice. They hardly talked about the crash anymore. They wanted to dress up and dance and have a good time. There might be boys from the Weequake section of Newark at the Y, older boys, who wouldn't necessarily know they were just ninth graders. Mary wore her favorite dress, red wool with a full skirt and metallic buttons down the front that either were or weren't made of old coins. Rusty thought they were. Her boss's wife saved their daughter's best things for Mary. Mary used to think Rusty bought them at a snazzy shop, Bonwit Teller, because that's what the labels inside said. But last year, Mary met Mrs. Witten, the boss's wife, at an office party. And when Mrs. Witten admired Mary's dress, Mary jumped at the chance to say, "It came from Bonwit Teller." Mrs. Witten said, "Yes, dear, I know. We get almost all of Charlotte's good clothes at Bonwit's." How embarrassing that until then, she'd had no idea Rusty was bringing her hand-me-downs from Charlotte Witten. What must Mrs. Witten have thought? But when she'd confronted Rusty about Charlotte's dresses, expecting she wasn't sure what, Rusty said, cheerfully, "I never said I bought them, honey."
There's Mary getting ready to go to a dance, deciding what to wear. I mean, falling in love for the first time in this novel. I mean, it is an adult novel about tragedy, but much of the book explores themes of adolescence. And I'm curious, how do you see themes from your previous books fitting into this one?
Well, they do. I mean, you know, all the first falling in love.
Yes.
The first really understanding that your parents our people, and they're far from perfect. Miri's falling in love in this book is a very serious falling in love. It's very far from puppy love. I don't want to say too much, but it happens very early in the book that she meets Mason. It's Mason. Let's just face it, okay? It's Miri and Mason, and their love story is going to be a major part of this book, and the way that they become friends. Best friends also, and that's very important, and it's very dear to me. It's very special to me.
Let's get some sound in here. This is Lena Dunham, creator of an actress in the hit show Girls. She says that it's impossible to overstate the influence of Judy Blume on her work. Here's a 2004 interview that she did with you, Judy. She describes her first experience with Blume's book, with your book, Forever. It's a book that an 8-year-old Dunham babysitter told her she could not read, and yet Dunham was undaunted.
I took Forever to the bathroom to read, and then I heard my mom coming, so I stuck it under the toilet and went running out. And then I went back later to check for it, and it was gone. I was freaked out, and my babysitter came to me and she said, "Did you take my copy of Forever? I saw it in the bathroom under the toilet," and I told her that my cat had put it there.
Those cats do the craziest things.
Darn those cats. Here's Nora in Rocky River, Ohio. Hi, Nora. Welcome to On Point with Judy Blume.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm thrilled to be talking to Ms. Blume. She shaped my childhood and my adolescence. I remember huddling in the corners of our middle school library trying to get a copy of the one copy of Forever. And Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret was such a huge part of my life. And then my daughter, Rory, read the book last year when she was 12. And she absolutely adored it. So I love that it can cross the generations.
Cross the generations. Nora, thank you.
I'm happy about that, too. And it's interesting because kids are reading Margaret and the other books much younger. I hear from kids as young as 8. Like Lena was reading Forever. I would say that's a little young. But kids 8 years old, maybe 7 even, are reading Margaret because they're reading younger. I like them. I like it if they read it again when they are more like Nora's daughter and ready, you know, and on the cusp themselves. But I don't think it's wrong or that it should be taken away from them when they're younger. I would have been very interested in that book when I was 9 years old.
Talk about young readers. I mean, in their day, when they first came out, your novels were, they were really among the first to tackle issues of racism and bullying and divorce, among other things. I mean, you generated a lot of discussions, certainly, but your books were also a source of controversy. Several were banned from school libraries. I'm curious your thoughts about that. How did you handle that at the time?
Well, at first, I was devastated because I never understood what could possibly be wrong with puberty. You know, it's natural, it's normal, it's going to happen to everybody whether you want it to or not for your kids. So I felt isolated, I felt sad. But then I joined up with the National Coalition Against Censorship. And once I had this wonderful group to work with, you know, I'm not a person who just sits back and takes it. And it was exhilarating to work with them, not just on behalf of my own books, but all the books that those who wanted to challenge and censor books at that time in the 80s were coming after. They were always books that kids liked. It was as if kids liked a book, then there had to be something wrong with it, something dangerous about it.
Here's Maricela from Miami, Florida. Maricela, welcome to On Point with Judy Blume.
Hi there, Jane.
Hi.
And hi there, the warmest of regards to my Judy Blume. Oh, my God, I'm like so excited.
Hi.
You're like my movie star. I just want to thank you also because your books have just been amazing all my life. I was almost like not even, I couldn't believe it that you wrote another book. I'm so excited. I'm about to go buy it. I was hoping you're going to be at a book signing, or did I already miss it here in Miami?
I think you missed it. Yes, I was. I was at Books
that.
And Books had a wonderful event for me at a large venue, at a synagogue, actually. It was, I'm so sorry.
I'm going to be so sad. But again, thank you. I have a little forever story, too. I'm from Jackson Heights, New York, originally. And I had emailed you a long time ago. I don't know if it was on MySpace or when Facebook started. And I told you my mom didn't speak English. And that was the only way I got away with her buying it, because they wouldn't let us buy it at the Hallmark store. So I told her, Mom, I need this book for school. So please, you need to buy it for me. And she's like, okay, sure. You know, she bought it for me, never knowing. Wow, I was so excited to have a copy of my own copy of Forever. And forget it. Your books are just amazing. My teachers used to bring Super Fudge to life. You know, and I plan on doing the same thing with my daughter. I just want to thank you. Thank you for writing another book.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm glad you got to read the books that you wanted to read, and I'm glad that you're sharing with your own kids. Thank you.
Maricela, thank you. Judy Blume, when did you realize you were a writer, that you had a gift of storytelling?
Well, I had stories running around inside my head when I was little, always had stories, but it never occurred to me, nor did anyone ever suggest, because they didn't know about my stories. I never shared them. I thought that I was weird. No one ever suggested that that was a possibility. In the 50s, when I was growing up, it was, you know, go to college, become a teacher, a nurse, or you could be a secretary. I mean, those were the three professions that I thought about for myself, although very much secretly I wanted to be on the stage, and my best friend Mary also wanted to be on the stage. So we went to a lot of plays. We lived, you know, again, very near New York City, and we were free-range kids then, so we were allowed to go by train into the city and go to the theater, and we had our dreams.
What inspired you initially to start writing for younger readers?
Well, what inspired me to start writing was my own need. I had all that creative energy that had a place to go as long as I was in school. And then suddenly I married very young, as we all did then. And I had two babies before I was 25. And I needed a place for the creative energy. I think I would have gone cuckoo myself if I hadn't found an outlet. And, you know, writing was safe. I was at home with the kids. It was something that I could do. It didn't cost any money. And I started letting these stories come out. I always identified with kids. I never thought about writing for any other group but kids.
Everyone seems to have a favorite Judy Blume book, or two, or three, right? Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite book?
Oh, kids always ask me that question, and I tell them it's like asking a mom, which is your favorite child? You know, today it's this one, tomorrow it's that one, next week it's another one. I mean, they're my babies. I have different feelings for all of them. I guess for Fudge and Margaret, the books that brought me my first readers, they'll always be special.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with best-selling author Judy Blume this hour, and you can join the conversation. Does Judy Blume still speak to you? Judy Blume's perhaps best known book, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, is, like In the Unlikely Event, set in New Jersey. Its protagonist, Margaret, pictures herself in a close personal relationship with God, although she's struggling to figure out organized religion. Here is her first message to God at the beginning of the book. This is on audiobook, voiced by Laura Hamilton.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. We're moving today. I'm so scared, God. I've never lived anywhere but here. Suppose I hate my new school. Suppose everybody there hates me. Please help me, God. Don't let New Jersey be too horrible. Thank you.
Judy Blume, I'm telling you, I read it in fourth grade. It's taking me back.
Well, Margaret was the first book where I really let go. You know, it was the third published book. But after that, I said, okay, now I know how to do this. I know how to do this writing thing a little bit. I mean, I, you know, certainly didn't think of myself as a real writer or a professional. But I said, I know how to do it. And so I'm going to let go. And I'm just going to tell the truth, my reality of what it was like to be in sixth grade. And that was Margaret. But I think that Miri in The Unlikely Event has almost more to do with Sally J. Friedman, which was, in fact, my most autobiographical book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sally's father is a dentist, and again, there's Dr. O in this book. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that my daughter became a commercial airline pilot. And when she read an early draft of this book, she has always read the earliest drafts of my books. She said to me, Mother, how could you never have told me this story? Which is true. I never told her this story of that I'm telling in The Unlikely Event. And it just struck her as so bizarre. My brother became career Air Force. I mean, surely we must have flying in our genes. And since I've written the book, for the first time in my life, I can now sleep on airplanes. I don't know whether I've worked through something or I'm just exhausted from my book tour, but I now can sleep on airplanes.
That's interesting.
Which is interesting, I think, yes.
Here's Emily in New Milford, Connecticut. Hi, Emily. You're on the air with Judy Blume. Hi.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Judy. I'm so thrilled to hear you, your voice, and I love this show. I wanted to thank you for Margaret because my mom couldn't talk to me about that stuff, you know, getting your period. And I got mine very early, and my mother was probably a little thrown off by the whole thing, and that book just helped me so much. And my dad's a minister, and so there was religion, all the religion that you wrote about, the discussions that you wrote about, opened up my mind a little bit, you know, that there wasn't just one way, and I love all your books, and I a wifey and just everything. So you're I'm a big fan, and I'm just so happy that you have a new book out, and I can't wait to get it. So thank you for all your years of writing for us. Thanks. You have no idea what you've done for everyone.
That's
thank
very
you.
Nice, Emily. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You know, Judy Blume, you mentioned your daughter. I'm curious, knowing the kind of writer that you are and how well you have connected over the years with young people, what kind of mother you were. Did you connect with your daughters the way you think readers connected with you?
Oh, well, I was a mother like every mother who made a lot of mistakes. And we all do. And you do the best that you can. And when the time comes, you can apologize for the mistakes that you feel you made. And you can't go back and do it over again. I loved my kids a lot. I still do. We have a good relationship. Thank goodness for that. We all get along well. But, you know, there were rough times, just like every family.
Caller Emily made me think of the review. Well, you talked about being a writer and you didn't really know you were a writer, or didn't really think you could do it until you read the review of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, in the New York Times. And then you thought,
that's true.
Maybe I got this. Maybe I can do this.
I know. It was such a shock. It was like, oh, you know, yeah, that was the first time that I thought that. Mm-hmm.
Here's Patrick in Fishersville, Virginia. Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I just wanted to tell Ms. Bloom in particular, your books, and especially Hello, God, they're absolutely brilliant, and they truly do cross gender lines. I was active duty military for almost 15 years. And with that, my family moved quite a bit. And on the trip, we always grab a few books for the kids. And my 9-year-old son actually started reading Hello, God. And that helped him with the move and helped him verbalize some of the concerns he had about going to new schools and moving to new places. And since then, he's read probably 5 or 6 different books, and he doesn't put them down. He absolutely loves them. It's helped him understand his sister and some of the changes that she's going through.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a great, unexpected thing for my son.
Oh, Patrick,
how old is he now?
I've read them,
Patrick.
Too. I'm sorry?
How old is your son now?
He's still 9. We just moved last.
Oh, he's 9. So. I see. Okay. So in a couple of years, you can give him then again. Maybe I won't, and that might help him too.
Patrick, thank you. Judy, did you intend to write for boys and girls?
You know, I hate labels and categories, and I hate saying there are books for boys and books for girls, because I think, you know, we're all curious about one another. And just the way Patrick said, you know, Margaret helped him understand his sisters better. I think, you know, you give a girl then again, maybe I won't, and she will maybe understand a boy better, and that boys have feelings, and that boys are scared, and boys are going through puberty too.
In 2012, Judy Bloom, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. You spoke about it. I'm just curious in this moment how that has changed you, how that experience has changed you as a writer.
Well, I'd like to say something profound, but I you know, at the moment, I remember thinking this will change me, and every moment must count from now on. And all of those things that we go through when we hear news like this. And I forget most days. I forget to be grateful for every day. And, you know, I just go on. I don't think about it much.
Here's John in Winchester, Massachusetts. Hi, John. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Ms. Bloom.
Hi.
First, hello. I just want to say thank you. I grew up in rural Montana, single mom, worked several jobs, and the one thing we had to look forward to most nights was her reading Judy Bloom books to me, and I separately read Super Fudge several times, and I now have 4 kids, 2 of which are grade school age, so age 8 and 7, and I want to introduce them to you, but I want some advice on where to start.
Start with the Fudge books, definitely. Start with Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. Read them out loud at night, and then just as, you know, your mom did with you, I think that's the best.
John, thanks so much for the call. Here's Edie in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Edie. Welcome to On Point with Judy Bloom.
Hi, Karen.
Hi,
Karen. I wanted to thank you for your books. I wanted to tell you that when I was in my 30s, my best friend and I read read Summer Sisters, and it had such a profound impact. Today I'm almost 70, and my email address is nbosister And I just continue to cling to their memories of that book and how much fun it was. Mm. And one day I hope to be able to read your books to my baby granddaughter.
Ah, thank you so much. I love Summer Sisters too. Never be ordinary. That's what Caitlin told Vix. Never be ordinary. NBO.
NBO. Edie, thank you. Some comments from our listeners on Twitter. My grandfather died when I was in kindergarten, and I was given tiger eyes to help me process it. I appreciate Judy Blume. Annie says, Judy, as a child of the 70s, I grew up with Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, and I devoured everything else you wrote for us. And yeah, one day I discovered Wifey in my mom's bedroom. I read it in furtive moments and always put it right back. At 48, I still remember your description of the sun's warmth on the protagonist as she lay on the beach. And that, plus Margaret, gave me a very interesting bridge into adolescence.
I bet it did.
Here's Casey in New Haven, Connecticut. Casey, welcome to On Point with Judy Blume.
Hi, Jane. Thanks.
Yes.
Judy, big fan of your work, and I just thank you for putting it out there for kids and adults to enjoy.
Thank you.
When I was a kid, Tales of Fourth Grade Nothing was my favorite book. It might have been the only book I was never forced to read. I just loved that book. But my question was, right now I'm reading Tiger Eyes for the first time. I have two girls who are growing up and trying to get a feel for what they're reading. And I want to know how you think about presenting violent scenes. One of the scenes from Tales of Fourth Grade Nothing was kind of a small scene in which we learned that the father was held up on a train at gunpoint. And that scene always stuck with me because I didn't live in the city. And now Tiger Eyes, of course, starts with a shooting in a city. I just want to know what your thought process in putting those scenes together for kids.
I have to say that I do not remember that the father was held up on a train at gunpoint. I will have to go back and look at that because Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing is a funny book and it's meant to be a funny book. And true, when I wrote it, things were different about being in the city. But I don't remember that at all. Tiger Eyes, yes, starts with a violent event, and it is about loss. And I didn't really know until I saw the movie that we made of Tiger Eyes. I didn't know that it was really about the loss of my father.
Hmm.
He didn't die violently, but he died suddenly. And I was with him, and I was very close to him. I wasn't 17. Davy is actually 15 when her father dies. I was 21. And, even in the new book, it's terrible. These terrible things happen to us, and we think that we can't move on from them. I will never get over this, I thought to myself. And it's true that you don't get over it in some ways. It's always inside you. My father lives in my memories, but my memories are happy memories. And my father would have wanted me to get on with my life. Mm-hmm. He is the one who always said, life goes on. Life is for the living. And even Davy learns that in Tiger Eyes. It's one of my favorite of my books. Thank you.
Sophia is in Boston. Hi, Sophia. Welcome to On Point with Judy Blume.
Hi, everyone. Thank
Hello.
You.
Hi, Sophia.
Hi, Judy. How are you?
Good.
I'm calling just to share this with you. It's about my son, who's now 15. And he's blind since birth. And just to let you know that Fudge and Cooper Fudge were his favorite tape on, to listen. And it did really, really help him with his anxiety going to hospital. We knew that, we'll have a tape recorder with, your books. And he actually renamed his teddy bear Fudge.
Oh, I read those books, I've never really read another. And when I was reading the first one, I kept changing it. And the engineer said to me, you have to read it exactly the way it is. And I said, no, I wrote it, you see, and I get to change it. And he said, too late, Judy. You should have thought of that before. And that was my first experience with recording a book. I don't do it anymore. I don't like my voice, so I don't do it.
Oh, no. Sophia, thank you for that memory. You know, as Sophia talks, I think you must still get a lot of fan mail, Judy Blume. And I'm curious, what's most gratifying to hear? I mean, a story of a little boy who renames his teddy bear after one of your characters. You know, it's quite something, what the legacy that you've left for so many children.
Well, a child who's blind and who is listening to the books, I think that, you know, that really gets me. But I'm emotional and I'm grateful to my readers, because, you know, you can write the books and they can be published, but without readers and readers who tell you that they've read them and tell you about what the books meant to them, that's the most that a writer can ever ask for.
Well, I know I speak for many fans to say thank you, Judy Blume, for all your work. 28 novels, 85 million copies sold around the world. The new novel is called In the Unlikely Event. Judy Blume, thank you so much for being here today. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.